The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January only costs $7.99. It's titled, Five Things You Can Do to Witness Christ. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Five Things You Can Do to Witness Christ by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, equipping you to witness Christ on the front lines. Five Things You Can Do to Witness Christ.
Law was intended to uphold religious liberty and yet make sure that no one else was making my health care decisions based on their beliefs.
In a free society, the sister should be allowed to say, I can't have anything to do with that choice. If you want to make it, go make it. Don't involve me.
For 2,000 years, he called it, what, anachronistic, and that Francis is only now dragging the church into the real world. That church has more to do with the real world than Piers Morgan could ever touch with his pinky.
The only thing that overcomes that roaring lion is the Lion of Judah, not you, the little house cat.
People say, God just wants me to be happy. Is that right? I've just missed that verse.
Organists in Indiana love Issues, etc.
The media template on Pope Francis was written just about 15 seconds after he was elected, and it has not changed much on the new pope, and he's still, relatively speaking, the new pope. The template is that he's changing everything, that he is tossing off all tradition, all precedent, and that he intends to do the same with the church that he leads. Well, the news comes out that the new pope is ready to name new cardinals. That is, technically, the princes of the church, the pool from which his successor will probably be chosen at long last, and the way that most popes shape the future of the church is by choosing these leaders. Who will he choose? Will it be what the media expects? Revolutionary men with new ideas to be the cardinals in the church? We shall see. Also, the news is that the Pope is being a little more stingy with an honorific title, Monsignor, that usually goes to aged or experienced priests. What does all this mean? Well, the press says this is what the Pope is doing. He's reshaping Roman Catholicism. Is that necessarily true? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. coming to you live on this Friday, January the 10th. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. James Hitchcock will be joining us. He's Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. We'll be talking about three stories, the naming of new cardinals by Pope Francis, Pope's limiting the title Monsignor, and the fate of a Roman Catholic order, much favored by previous popes, in particular John Paul II, the Legionaries of Christ. A little bit later, Dr. Reza Aslan will be joining us. He's written this book. It's a New York Times bestseller, called Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. He proposes in that book that Jesus is just one among many failed Jewish zealots who had hoped to usher in a messianic kingdom with himself as king, a bit of a death wish, but utterly failed as a zealot that was somehow turned into a messiah, at least in their imaginations, by his followers a century after his death. This is not new stuff. This has been proposed by historical criticism for about 200 years, but it's being revived in this new book. We'll talk with its author, Dr. Reza Aslan, a little bit later here on Issues Etc. Get your reaction to that for about 10 minutes, and then, since it is the first week back after the new year, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year. That means we're going to take the five highest vote-getters from Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in the last year. We're going to play them for you, and then you get to pick which one of those will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year for 2013, the year just passed. We always give away the LPR bundle package. That's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, and notepad. We're also giving away the audio DVD of our summer's Making the Case conference to the listener with the best vote during Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Our call in number 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page and vote in advance for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. James Hitchcock is a regular guest. He's professor emeritus of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Before we get to some of these more timely subjects on Pope Francis, what do you think about Pope Francis being named Time Magazine's Man of the Year in 2013?
Well, that's quite interesting. First of all, one should understand what they mean by Man of the Year, because historically, going all the way back to the 1930s, they don't necessarily mean it as a compliment. I believe Adolf Hitler was Man of the Year. It's the man who has had the greatest effect on history during the previous year. Now, they are very favorable to the Pope. They don't mean this as a put-down. But I also think that they're just carried away. He's going to change the church. Oh, the church is never going to be the same again. And if that were true, then, of course, he would have to be considered the man of the century. So I think it's a little bit premature, reflecting a certain amount of uncritical enthusiasm.
Do the media properly understand Pope Francis's direction and teaching?
No, I don't think they do, and I think many Catholics don't, for that matter. The Pope, I don't know whether to use the word impulsive is quite accurate or not, but he says what's on his mind. He doesn't often stop to carefully craft it. He's not the kind of public official, you know, who's got to have a prompter next to him or a text next to him. And sometimes I think he opens himself up to misunderstanding, especially because people will tend to jump on anything that is a little bit sensationalistic. So I think what we have here is a Pope who obviously wants to change the direction of the church. He wants to make it more apostolic. He wants to make it more committed to the poor. He wants to make it more evangelical. It's not altogether clear what he wants to do to achieve those goals, but then they attribute to him quite erroneously certain other things, you know, like we're going to embrace the sexual revolution, or we're going to ordain women, or something of that kind, which is completely inaccurate.
The other question, this kind of goes to the stories that we're dealing with you today, is that it seems that part of the template of the media on Pope Francis is that he is consciously breaking with the policies of previous popes. Do you see any evidence of that?
Well, it depends on what you mean by policies. From the very beginning of his election, of course, he obviously was much more informal. He eschewed much of the if you will call it pomp, of the papal office. One of the subjects you said you were going to bring up is the matter of the Monsignors, which can be kind of seen the same way. These are relatively superficial things, I think, and don't indicate any, you know, sharp direction in the church's going. He certainly is, as he himself has said, not going to change basic moral teaching, not going to change basic dogma. He actually said in passing, we cannot ordain women, which is the position that Pope John Paul II took. He has said, you know, of course we accept all the traditional teachings of the church. There's some possibility of adjustment, I suppose. One of the debated questions is, what about divorced Catholics? Can they receive communion, and under what circumstances? There may be some room for flexibility in that regard, but I don't think it's going to be anything really dramatic and far-reaching.
He is set to name a new round of cardinals. I think the names are supposed to come out sometime this month.
Yes.
This is not an unusual thing for popes to do, but what exactly does this mean, the naming of new cardinals, and what's expected of this pope?
Well, what that does, of course, is it helps the Pope to shape the College of Cardinals the way he thinks it should be. It will very often have a big influence over who is then chosen as his successor. Francis is 76. He could be living another 20 years. He could be living just a few more years. We don't know. So it could be that the College of Cardinals that he appoints is the one which will choose his successor. These are the people whom he wants to have basically as his advisors. He's not totally free to just pick whom he wants. The Pope can't sit down and look at a list of priests and say, let's make these men cardinals. He's bound in, if you will, by the need to make cardinals in some of the major cities of the world, high-ranking officials in the Vatican. Those are categories where he's going to have to make cardinals and where he has limited choice over who he appoints. There's been very little speculation, no really hard speculation, as a matter of fact, over whom he is going to choose. When it comes out, most of the names will mean nothing, probably to the average person in the United States. Possibly Archbishop William Laurie of Washington will become a cardinal. It's probably unlikely that there will be more than one American. We already have a large number of Americans in the Sacred College.
Now, the other thing that's somewhat related to this has to do with the honorific title Monsignor that is usually awarded to priests, has some minor perks attached to it, but it is an honorific. But the Pope wants to limit that, or at least the Vatican has reported that they wants to limit that to priests who have essentially kind of served their entire life in the priesthood, men 65 and
yes.
older. What's going on there?
Yes, well, you have to do a little bit of history on that. First of all, the word Monsignor, my Lord, historically was always used for bishops. And the office of Monsignor, the honor of Monsignor as we know it, doesn't exist in a number of countries of the world. It has existed in the United States since the late 19th century. It started out, just as you just stated it, it would have been older priests were given the title, were given the right to wear certain vestments, and it was kind of a way of saying this man was really qualified to be a bishop. He wasn't a bishop, but he merited the offer, so we're giving him the honor. Then it expanded greatly. It depends. One of the anomalies of it is it from one diocese or one city to another, there are places where the local bishop hasn't actually nominated any new Monsignors in years, and so there are almost none left in the diocese. There are others where he has appointed a good number of Monsignors, so it differs greatly from one place to another, which is, as I say, is one of the anomalies of it. There were traditionally different levels of Monsignor. Francis has said there's basically only going to be one, and in particular, what would be significant is he's cutting out what might have been called the junior rank, where you could actually see young priests, 35 years old, being made Monsignors. And then, of course, they would be Monsignors for many, many years. The Pope is very negative towards clerical ambition, and I think he sees that as the kind of thing we don't want to foster. I think he's very unbureaucratic. And I think that he thinks the multiplication of bureaucratic offices and honors and titles and that kind of thing is not the direction in which the church is going. This, to me, is a interesting reform and one that reflects Francis's spirit. I wouldn't say that it's a reform of tremendous significance. Doesn't portray anything very radical.
Dr. James Hitchcock is our guest. We're talking about several stories regarding the Roman Catholic Church. When we come back, we're going to talk about the fate of a Roman Catholic order that had been favored by Pope John Paul II because of its ability to recruit young men into religious orders. It's called the Legionaries of Christ. It's come under some suspicion and even Vatican investigation. We'll see what the story is right after this.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen on Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thank you for helping us make budget again last year. Thanks to your support, Lutheran Public Radio has been independent and in the black for almost 6 years. You've heard us say, now only our listeners can cancel us, and we mean it. Thanks for listening, thanks for your prayers, and thanks for your financial support. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the world, Issues Etc., and sacred music for the world, LutheranPublicRadio.org. We're looking forward to partnering with you in 2014.
Are you concerned about weight gain during the holidays? Work out this winter at Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois. Arch Fitness offers adult boot camps on weekday evenings and on weekday and Saturday mornings. For more information, check out the Facebook fan page for Arch Fitness or call Kevin Reisick at 618-670-6952. Arch Fitness is located at 127 West MacArthur Drive in Cottage Hills, Illinois. Win the war against winter weight. Arch Fitness of Cottage Hills, Illinois.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. James Hitchcock is our guest, Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University. Another story that Reuters is reporting on as late as a couple days ago. Headline reads, Conservative Roman Catholic Order meets to turn page on scandalous past, talking about the Legionaries of Christ. What is this? I take it to be kind of an unofficial order, and what has been the story on it in the past?
Well, no, it's an official order. It was founded in 1941 by a Mexican priest, Maciel, and it was given full approval by the Vatican. It was little known until the 1990s when people began to notice how rapidly it was growing, and that at a time when young men were not flocking to the priesthood, they were to some extent flocking to the Legionaries of Christ. They caught the attention of Pope John Paul II, who apparently admired them greatly and supported them and thought that the future of the church lay partly with them. It turns out to be, unfortunately, one of the great scandals of the modern church. For years, there had been reports of misconduct of various kinds on the part of Father Maciel, involving sex, involving money. He was kind of a, unto himself. He just followed his own law. And the reports, when they came into the Vatican, were apparently discounted, but they continued in number. And after John Paul died and Benedict XVI became pope, he launched a major investigation, and Father Maciel was ordered to go back to Mexico and live a life of penance, and he died not long afterwards. The accusations against him were undoubtedly correct. This, of course, shook the Legion from top to bottom. They lost a number of members, but they're still a pretty large group. And right now, they're holding a convention in Rome. They're supposed to come up with a new constitution defining themselves. They're supposed to elect new officers, and then that will have to go to Pope Francis for his approval. It's a very big open question because the reports are that the Legion is quite divided between those who realize that Maciel was really a bad man, and we need to put as much distance as possible between us and him. Those who say, well, yes, he made mistakes, But we can overcome that, and let's just continue down the same path. And then apparently there's even a hardcore group that thinks that Maciel was falsely accused. So it sounds like there will be some resistance at this convention in Rome to any serious reform, and that will then put the whole thing squarely in Pope Francis's hands as to what he might choose to do.
So in essence, we have a relatively large, we're talking about 30,000 members.
Yes.
And influential, we're talking about perhaps 1,000 priests, an equal number of seminarians, spanning over 22 or 23 countries. This isn't some sort of small organization that Francis can afford to ignore for any reason.
No, that's quite right. And of course, it's something that cuts in various different directions. The Legion has already lost a number of members, including some very prominent members who stated their disillusionment and their disappointment that things were not progressing better. There do appear to be a substantial number of what you might call loyalists who don't think anything is substantially wrong. I must say this, that insofar as Francis has articulated a philosophy, if you will, as to how to run the church, he cannot allow the Legion, if you want to say, to escape unharmed. They represent, there are many good people who belong to the Legion, but as an institution, they represent exactly the kind of abuse of priestly authority, the worldliness, the ambition, and so forth, which he himself frequently denounces. Now, there is a great mystery or paradox about the Legion, and that is having such a tainted source in its founder, and this was allowed to go on at the highest levels for many years. At the same time, many really wonderful, dedicated, devoted priests have belonged to the group and still do. How one reconciles those two things is very difficult to say.
Do you think Francis will be able, I mean, because it probably will fall into his lap, as you say, you think he'll be able to thread the needle there and to come out with let this organization emerge as the good influence that it is and, in essence, leave its bad founding and the scandalous past in the past?
I would certainly hope so. I mean, I do think he's got the ability to do it. Here we run into a paradox of Francis. He's a breath of fresh air, comes from Latin America, never before been a pope from Latin America, no experience in Rome, etc., which is good in many ways if you're called in to clean things up. On the other hand, how much does he know about the intricacies of all this? How much does he know about the history of the Legion and who their protectors might have been and how they managed to get away with things for so many years? He's got to probably become a quick study in that regard. We should also recall that he appointed a committee of 8 cardinals who are supposed to advise him on the governance of the church. Presumably he's meeting with those people on a fairly regular basis, and I imagine something like this will be referred to them, and they represent a fairly broad cross-section of the College of Cardinals.
There's another question I had for you, and it just came up as kind of a toss-away line in the story about the Legionaries of Christ, and that is what it sounds like plans that are afoot, and I think we discussed it in a different context, for Pope John Paul II to be beatified. The line simply says, Pope John Paul II, who is set to become a saint in May, and the sentence continues. What do we know about this?
Well, the beatification will take place. There will undoubtedly be people who will object and say he should have done something about the Legion. I think there is no doubt that he, I think, made an important mistake of judgment in not moving on them. On the other hand, I think one could say that the history of saints also, as the Church, Catholic Church understands it, shows that saints are also men of who fail in various ways. They even sin. That's part of human nature. So the fact that he did make what I think is a serious mistake in this regard should not necessarily count against him.
Is that the final step for beatification that is set to take place in May? I know it's not all one step.
Yeah, beatification is the final step prior to canonization.
And that's a decision that Francis himself makes?
Pardon me?
That's a decision that Francis himself makes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dr. James Hitchcock is Professor Emeritus of History at St. Louis University, a regular guest here on Issues Etc. Dr. Hitchcock, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Raisa Aslan. He has written this book called Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. It's a number one New York Times bestseller, had been a number one New York Times bestseller. The premise of the book is rather simple and not incredibly original. There's nothing wrong with that, but not incredibly original. It reflects the scholarship of about the last 200 years, liberal Bible scholarship. Jesus is not accurately portrayed in the New Testament Gospels. You got a Jesus of the New Testament Gospels, and then you have a Jesus of the historical sources. When we come back, we'll find out from Dr. Raisa Aslan who he believes the Jesus of the historical sources was. We'll be right back.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
The official end of Christmas was last Sunday, but because of the blizzard of 2014, Good Shepherd Lutheran in Collinsville, Illinois will unofficially celebrate the close of the season this Sunday, January 12th. Join us at 4 p.m. as the musicians of Good Shepherd, along with a 17-member orchestra, present John Levitt's Christmas cantata, What Child Is This? For the church address and more information, please visit us online at goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.